On today's episode of The Good Word, Dan Titus joins me to discuss Draymond Green's comments on the CBA and why it's bad for the players. Oklahoma City signs their second guy of their big three. What does this look like for their future? Anthony Davis undergoes eye surgery, Luka Doncic's extension, and we handicap the best three teams in each conference going into next season. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into today's show. We are, of course, on YouTube, so don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you consume your audio podcast. My man Dan Titus is back to talk to us right before Summer League. Dan, how you doing, man?
Feeling great, Vin. Just got back from vacation. I know you got one planned, well-deserved. Excited to get out to Summer League and see some of these young hoopers play.
Dude, the last time I went on a pre-planned vacation that was really, really, that was supposed to be really, really good to me, not last summer, but like a couple summers ago, the first day I landed, you know what happened? I found out about the, how do I put this? We found out about Ime Udoka's private flings. That's what I found out the first day I went on a vacation. So hopefully LeBron James doesn't get traded or something crazy happens or whatever it is when I'm gone. And if it does, oh well, I'll deal with it when I get back. All right?
Now, turn those notifications off.
Yeah. I ain't bringing my computer with me. Y'all just gonna have to deal, right? Now, interesting news came out this morning, Dan, that I feel like we all kind of expected to a large degree. Last week or the week before, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander inked a supermax deal that puts him in the almost in the $70 million category. We wondered what would happen with the number, quote unquote, two and three guys, Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams. Chet Holmgren signed for a 5-year maximum deal up to $250 million. And now that's left. What's left is Jalen Williams, who could sign the same sort of deal, rookie scale extension, not the big boy max, shockingly. A 5 for $250 is not the big boy max. A 5 for $250 is the rookie max. Jalen Williams can sign for a rookie scale max deal that when people hear it, it doesn't kick in until 26, 27. So they have one more year on their deal, and then the 5-year deal start kicking in. I assume Jalen Williams will sign something similar. You're going to have one more year, like you said, on the rookie scale deal. So any luxury tax implications for the champion Oklahoma City Thunder, you can push them down the road. Are you surprised that Oklahoma City just said, you know what, we're not messing around with restricted free agency on Chet Holmgren, who's missed time and everything else. We're going to give him the max deal and call it a day.
Not surprised at all. I mean, I think you got to lock up these players now. You don't want to even see restricted free agency. And I think that that's kind of a trend that we've seen with a lot of these players this year in the CBA is that they're opting for that guaranteed money. They don't want to have to go see what that open market may be about. But I think also it speaks to it's Oklahoma City Thunder. They just won a championship. This is their core. They're going to build around SGA. He's the MVP, finals MVP, literally every award he took home individually this year, it seemed like. And then when you add in Chet Holmgren and what he could bring, his future, the potential that he has, we've only scratched the surface with him. So I think it's wise for the Oklahoma City Thunder to lock him up. And I wouldn't be surprised if Jalen Williams is going to come right after that. So once they have their big three locked in there, that's when it's going to start to get a little bit interesting for the Thunder, because they were really good and smart about moving off of certain contracts on rookie extensions like Josh Giddey before that became too expensive. They got an Alex Caruso. They're going to start playing these cap strategies to kind of maximize keeping their big guys there, their notable marquee guys, and then kind of churning out some of those role players to kind of keep this extending that window for the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Well, yeah, that's the thing that everybody assumes with OKC. Oh, putting the OKC, we all assume in today's economic climate, and you see the numbers going up and up and up, right? We all assume that despite the numbers going up and up, that Oklahoma City will not be able to afford their top three players. We generally believe now that you can only afford one player on a big boy max and maybe a second guy, but certainly not a third guy. Like if you look at the Lakers with Luka Doncic and LeBron James, like they can barely fill out their roster And they were hoping and praying that Austin Reeves took, you know, his extension, which he did not take. And now he can sign next year for almost $200 million, which doesn't seem very likely that you can sustain a model, a business model, where three players are making a max. So teams have to make decisions and players have to make decisions. Players are not going to pass up money. Teams are not going to place themselves in this very, very super restrictive luxury tax second apron. And it's really complicated for people who don't know but so much about this. And you think, man, is this a hard cap? Yes, it is a hard salary cap. And before we get, I'll get into that in a minute, because I want to stick with OKC, because I don't want to lose the Oklahoma City point. You're going to have, in a couple of years, you're going to have Chet Holmgren making $50 million in 2 years, right? Or close to 50. He's going to be making 41, which is the projection, $41 million. Shea's going to be at actually $40.8 million before his extension kicks in. And if Jalen Williams has the same thing, then he's going to be right around Chet Holmgren's number. And you're like, man, can you have three guys making $40 million? In theory, yes, you can, right? The cap in 26-27, which is the year that I'm talking about, that is projected to be $165 million. That's before the taxes, before the aprons, before everything else. That is just almost like close to the floor of what you can spend is $165 million. And you will have three players, and if they get this J-Dub deal done, you have three players making $120 of that $165. You can once again go over the cap to sign your own guys and everything else. And here's the important part, because we think of Oklahoma City as the team that will never pay the luxury tax. That's not true. We think of the James Harden situation from 2012, where Russ was on the max, KD was on the max, they signed Serge Ibaka to a big deal, and they let James Harden walk, or they traded James Harden because he didn't want to take $4 million a year less than what he was being offered. So they traded him for, I believe, Steven Adams, Jeremy Lamb, and I think maybe, or Steven, a draft pick that became Steven Adams, Kevin Martin, whatever it was, like some machinations of that deal. I can't remember exactly, but it was trade him to Houston, and that's where Harden went. And OKC never got back to the NBA Finals, which is where they were with the first Russ, KD, Harden year, where they were in full bloom. The point I want to drive home to this point is Oklahoma City has paid the luxury tax before, believe it or not. They paid the luxury tax five times. I know that sounds like a big-time shocker. Yeah, look on your face, right? That's a big-time shocker.
Wouldn't have expected that of a small market team like that.
Right, and that's the thing. When we think Oklahoma City is being cheap and blah, 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 they paid the luxury tax. They were actually the league's highest luxury tax payer in 2018. They paid $61 million in taxes for a team that did not even get out of the first round of the playoffs. That was the first year of the Paul George, Carmelo Rush year. The year before that, they paid $25 million. So they have paid big time money in the luxury tax. They try to not get into it because here's what happens. And this is where Dan Titus can interview me. If you don't pay the luxury tax, because of the league's revenue sharing system, as long as you don't pay the tax, you get that money back to you from the teams that do, right? So if 10 teams wind up paying the luxury tax, 20 teams get that whole number into a pie, distributed evenly back to you that you don't have to give to the players. That is just your own profit. That is free money. So when you decide to go into the luxury tax, not only are you paying into the pot, you are removing yourself from actually getting money back. You are subsidizing other teams, pretty much.
Interesting.
So that's why teams really don't want to go into the luxury tax, let alone the very restrictive aprons. And you have to ask yourself, if you're Oklahoma City, and this is where the draft picks come in, you sign the Chet, you sign the J-Dub, and then you ask the question later, okay, are we going to be able to afford to keep these guys on the back end? Will the league revenues continue to grow so that we can keep our three guys and not have to leverage draft picks or whatever for the future to augment the players behind the, you know, Isaiah Joes, the guys who help build out your roster. That's where the future draft capital comes in, where you can package those players and get younger players, and then the game just rewinds and it keeps you out of that very restrictive luxury tax territory. Like, that's why you have Isaiah Hartenstein on a 3 for $29 million. I know I'm talking for a while, so let me know where you're at. Let me know what most intrigues you with that, Dan.
Yeah, so I look at their cap table, right? For next season, it seems like they're good. It's really because SGA's extension doesn't kick in until 27, 28, right? That's when he's going to be making $60 million, taking up 35% of their cap. And right. Obviously, that's going to change as the cap grows. But so do you think that they're going to be prohibitive of signing the guys like Isaiah Hartenstein? Like, they're not, you don't expect OKC to be a team that's going to be able to go get free agents the way that they got Isaiah Hartenstein, which I would say was a game-changing rarity of them to actually go get somebody like that. Because if all your money's tied up, you're really just going to be mortgaging your future on these draft picks and these cheap contracts to kind of rise the tide or keep everybody above water. So I guess it just makes me question, like, what does this first and second apron, like, we've already started to see how the landscape is changing. The Boston Celtics were in the second apron this year. What did they have to do? They literally traded, you know, Jrue Holiday, Kristaps Porzingis. They got off all those contracts so they can get back under. So it makes me wonder how many, is that something we're going to see more frequently? Yes. Is this just the tip of the iceberg because everyone is scared of that second apron? And also, from a casual standpoint, what does the second apron mean? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's so much talk of the CBA. Draymond Green was talking about how free agency's dead. What does all this mean from like a casual observer of a team that's like, yo, why do I need to worry about whether my team gets this second apron, first apron, whatever?
Well, here's the thing. When you are in the first apron, you can still use the commonly NBA terms like the mid-level exceptions, the biannual exceptions, the taxpayer exceptions. You can still invest in your team to improve it by going outside. You can still go over the cap to sign your own guys. That's the first apron. Important. That's the first sort of threshold. Teams kind of want to stay away from that because you can wind up getting hard capped if you wind up using too many of those mechanisms. But the problem is when you get into the second apron, and the second apron is once you pass a certain threshold of salary, whether no matter how you get there, even if you draft extremely well and you sign your own guys and whatever it is, if you wind up in the second apron, you cannot, what the biggest thing is, you can't sign guys who wind up getting bought out by their teams. And if you're in the second apron too long, as in years, you wind up losing draft picks, which means you lose cost-controlled players for the first 4 years of their career, make a number that is lower than other players commiserate even to their skill set. Getting the draft
that's
right.
That's important.
Is far more important this time because the number is so cost controlled. Because you can have a player who's worth $40 million making $10 million and he doesn't hit restricted free agency or whatever it is until after year four or start talking after year three. But if you get in the second apron long enough and you lose those draft picks, you lose that. You also lose once you're in the second apron. You cannot aggregate your players. You can't trade your second starter, your sixth man, and your fifth starter for Kevin Durant. You can't go and combine players to make trades to make your team better. And if you do make a trade, it has to be dollar for dollar. You cannot take in a dollar more than what you are sending out. You can send out money. You can send out money to your heart's desire. You cannot take money in. That's why you saw Jrue Holiday going to Portland because his cap number was so big. Kristaps Porzingis going there. What that means in a practical sense is, and you just said it, Dan, you asked, what does this mean for the fan? What this means for the fan is you don't get a chance to see the Denver Nuggets of championship vintage, that championship team that had Bruce Brown and Jeff Green and all those guys before they had to start chipping away at them, play against the Boston Celtics in the NBA Finals. Like two great single season, no matter what you thought about afterwards, the Celtics were a historic single season team.
Right.
They ran through the league. They had the highest point differential. They ran through every aspect. They were untested and untouched. And a team like that, in theory, no matter what you think of them, if you're built that well, no matter if it's draft, trade, or free agency, I believe that greatness deserves a chance to run it back for years and let's see if you can have a dynastic run. And because of the second aprons, because it's so restrictive that teams have to make financial decisions to say, I don't want to win as much as I don't want to lose money. So I have to trade this. And as a league, as people covering the league, we don't get a chance to have that build, right? Mm. The build of, man, Denver won it last year. Boston won it this year. Let's see if they, as fully Voltron teams, can stay together and play like Lakers, Celtics, and have a three-year run where we can figure out who the best team is, because the league is bent on redistributing talent across the board so that the bad teams don't stay bad as long, the great teams don't stay great as long, and it's a little bit more of a more random NBA playoff year after year. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. And it seems to be working because we haven't had a repeat champion in a very long time. Mm-hmm. And look at Oklahoma City Thunder, Indiana Pacers. So, yeah, this is a really interesting. It just seems like the numbers that are being thrown around here, you know, when you look at SGA's contract, you know, going to be making upwards of $70 million by the end of this contract, unless he, you know, signs another extension. It's just hard to wrap your, like, as a fan looking at the numbers, I'm like, how can they afford to keep all these guys? But I think that the model for success right now probably is the Oklahoma City Thunder, right? Like, they have the combination of star power, draft capital, and I would say front office savantness, or some kind of front office knowledge of how to manage the books in a way that you're only going to be facing first apron problems, not second apron problems.
Yeah, you don't want to get in the second apron, because once you're in the second apron, you are screwed. Like, three teams were in the second apron this year. And when I tell you the three teams, you're like, of course, those three teams were in the second apron. The Phoenix Suns, who had three guys on big boy maxes, Book, KD, Brad Beal, which is why they're trying to get off of Brad Beal. They've been trying to get off Brad Beal from the moment they got him, right? Minnesota, who's had Rudy Gobert, big boy max. They traded Karl Towns because he was on a big boy max and brought in Julius Randle. And then Julius Randle took even less in his extension this summer than what he was already making. So you went from basically Karl making $52, $53 million a year to now Julius Randle next year making about $33, right? So even still, you're still in the luxury tax. And because you get Ant on a rookie level extension, not the super big boy extension, but the rookie level extension, you're still in the second apron. And the aforementioned Boston Celtics, who had Brown, Tatum, Porzingis, Holiday, Derek White making a nice amount of money. And you have to decide, do I want to pay $600 million in salaries and then tax penalties altogether just to keep a team when we got knocked out in the second round of the playoffs? And we're not going to have Jason Tatum next year because of his injury. Right. Like, those are the things that you kind of miss. And Draymond Green, I don't know if people saw it. Draymond Green went on Threads. I believe it was Threads, right? A couple nights ago.
Yeah, it was Threads. Mm-hmm.
And went on this long rant talking about basically how the new collective bargaining agreement ended free agency as we know it. And I think what he means is, and you could go and look on Threads, and Draymond is always really expansive on his thoughts. And I've talked to agents over the last 24, 48 hours, not even in preparation of this. I was just genuinely curious how the agents see this, because the players are signing big money deals. Like, the revenues have gone, like, literally through the roof. Like, there was a point where the salary cap, I want to say maybe my first year in the league, covering the league, maybe the salary cap was somewhere around $58 million. Like, I might have to look that up, but I want to say my first year covering the league, which was 2010, 2011, that was the salary cap. Now you have guys making that much. So the revenues have gone up and up and up. So you're not going to say the players are crying poor. But what happened after my first year was, it was a really big lockout. There was the lockout and the aftermath of LeBron James's decision and player empowerment, where players were basically passing up the money to go play where they wanted to play, and it upset the balance of the league, or it potentially upset the balance of talent distribution across the league when LeBron James goes and plays with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh in Miami. So then we have the lockout because Dan Gilbert was butthurt and all that. Pretty much, that's what it was, right?
Yeah.
And BRI, I'm going to give you a nerdy basketball term. BRI, which is basketball-related income, which is all everything that comes in from ticket sales to media rights deals to everything is put in this pot.
Yeah.
Up until 2011, Dan, the players had 57% of that. The players are the product. They took 57% of all basketball-related income. After 2011, they took home 50%. So while the pot got bigger,
their share got smaller,
and it's hard for the common fan to understand that or to take the players as employees, because you don't look at the players as employees. You don't look at the players as a union. Like a union. nine times out of ten, a lot of workers or our parents were in unions fighting against employers. You think of players as being employers on their own. So it's hard to win the public battle when the players are who you see and the owners are who you don't. But so that's the point. You get 70% taken from you. You lose games. You have the basketball reasons trade that Chris Paul could have winded up in L.A. David Stern acting as proxy for the New Orleans franchise said, absolutely not. And then he wound up going to the Clippers, right? Like, all those things were a product of that CBA. And every subsequent CBA in the past 15 years has had the players taking less and less of a bigger pie. Right? You're making
now
more money.
Now, is that until CJ McCollum stepped in and now they're making, did they raise their share or it's continuing?
No.
Okay.
The CJ McCollum CBA is where they are really screwed, because that is where the second aprons have come into play. And you let me know if I'm going too deep. The head of the Players Association after Billy Hunter in the 90s and early 2000s was Michelle Roberts. Michelle was a bulldog, but she got stuff done in relative nature, relative to like where the public tide was going to go. The players were not going to win public perception with the owners, especially in the aftermath of the decision. You get to take what you can get because people said the players had too much power. They hired, once Michelle Roberts left, they hired a woman named Tamika Tramaglio. Tamika, it did not seem like, had a full grasp of what she was up against. And it seemed to some degree like she was not working for the players. The players wound up feeling like she was working for herself.
Ooh.
And she wound up being removed shortly after this collective bargaining agreement was done. But it was done and it was too late to replace her and bring someone else in, because these things are so very complicated. Sure. And then now this is the CJ McCollum, the Grant Williams, you know, and now Andre Iguodala is the head of the Players Association. But Andre Iguodala is a former player, not a lawyer.
Yeah.
A smart investor in a bunch of different ways, but not a lawyer.
Yeah.
So what happens is, Dan, it's hard to get 300 players on the same page more than it is to get 30 owners on the same page, right? And here's the other part of this that I think people have not realized. Since 2011, 16 teams have changed hands of ownership. 16, that's over half the league. And then you're on the cusp of expansion when you might add two more teams, and one of them might be an international team. And you're asking me, what does that mean? That means is rich people aren't buying into properties that are losing propositions. You are buying into properties that are going to make you endless gobs of money. It's going to make you billions of dollars, which should let you know that the economic structure of the league is heavily tilted towards the value of the owners making more money. When you see Steve Ballmer pay, what, $2 billion at the time, which we thought was an astronomical amount of money when he paid $2 billion for the Clippers in 2014, that number is now $10 billion for the Lakers.
Mark and Walter paid that price.
Right. And then said, Jeannie Buss, you can remain the governor for the first 5 years. Because it is going to be such a smart investment. You're saying, Vinny, why is it a smart investment? It's a smart investment in large part because sports media is the one thing that in this valuation bubble has not yet burst. Live TV rights pays a lot of money. Amazon, NBC, ESPN, the streamers. The values are still going up, so it behooves you to buy in. Even if you buy in at $10 billion, you are going to get that money on the back end. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm not at all saying it's a bad thing because the players on this are making a lot more money. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to make $70 million. Right? They eating too. But when you talk about, when we're talking about what Draymond was talking about, which is saying the CBA ended free agency, you know what name I think about when I think about this, Dan? I think about Jonathan Kuminga. You hear anything about Jonathan Kuminga?
Yeah.
Have you heard anything about him?
Because now he's in a tight spot because normally he'd just be like, you know what, I'm going to test free agency. But there's no gauge of like really what that value could be for him because now he'd probably be taking a pay cut if he really believes in himself. He's like, you know what, let me just run it back another year because clearly Golden State doesn't want to extend me. You know,
he doesn't fit there. He doesn't fit there. He turned down an extension last year. I heard on the, you know, good enough authority that it was in excess of $100 million. That he turned down a rookie scale extension.
Wow.
And I would guess in large part because he didn't feel like he could excel there where the money wasn't going to be enough. And maybe, just maybe, if I go somewhere else and get traded, I can get the Chet Holmgren extension.
Right.
Why would he not believe that he couldn't get a Chet Holmgren-like extension if he goes to the right team and they can sign me to a 5-year deal? Makes perfect sense. So to land the plane as we end this segment, what I'm trying to say, guys, is free agency used to be like this endless bonanza where, oh, man, like LeBron can go somewhere, KD can go somewhere, or your top five players could potentially go somewhere. Those players aren't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a good thing. But what happens is the texture of the teams that are around Kevin Durant, those players have a hard time staying where they're at, even if you're drafted by this team, even, you know what I'm saying? Even if even if the team has done the right thing, you've done the right thing, you want to stay with the team that drafted you, there are fewer mechanisms for you to get your money. You can get it. You're just going to have to go somewhere else in a less desirable situation to get it. And where the fans lose is they have to check their media guides every year to see who's playing.
Wait,
where
he's on this team now? Wait, what, this guy got traded? The biggest free agency move this offseason was what? Miles Turner, 4 years, $107 million. That was Turner. So I think Draymond's right to a certain extent. Like if that's your biggest marquee free agency maneuver, free agency is pretty much dead. It's a lot of role player movement. We saw tons of trades. You know, Shams was dropping bombs. It's just, these are mid-level players that help your team build out a roster. It's not franchise-altering, you know, marquee players, superstars.
Yeah, and that's like I said, I've been talking to some prominent agents who rep the top players and who also rep the lunch pail guys, right? And what it looks like is going to happen is the owners wanted the NFL, right? They wanted the NFL where 30 teams are relevant, and this is where the media rights deals come in, where if 30 teams are relevant and there's a game on every night, there's not going to be a bad product on television every night. Like, there might be a bad team, but it's not going to be a bad game because you're not going to have the extremes of really good versus really bad. And that makes a lot of sense, and we will see if it works. Like, it sounds like I am criticizing everything. I am merely giving people the observation of how the players, from the standpoint, even though they are winning, it feels like they are losing because, once again, fewer ways and fewer mechanisms for you to go and get your money. You're going to get your money by and large. It's just the places that you can go to get them, the continuity of the fans that cannot see you grow with your team, not just the stars, but the role players, and not just the role players, but the veterans who help build the texture of the league. if you have to wonder where the veterans are year after year, you lose connectivity. You lose like, man, I watched him grow up here and I wanted him to stay here and watch this team climb and grow together and maybe stay, so that with a team chasing them, like the Denver Nuggets or the Boston Celtics or whomever, or the Oklahoma City Thunder, let's see if we can have a clash of the Titans. You're going to have a lot more random NBA finals year after year, a lot less sustainability, which to some people they may like because you feel like your team has a greater chance. But if your team is good and they've done things the right way, there's a very little chance that your team can actually stay there. Welcome back to The Good Word here with Dan Titus. Whew, hopefully y'all understood that. If you didn't, oh well, go back and listen to it again. To the basketball part, Dallas Mavericks center Anthony Davis underwent eye surgery, I think, for, was it a detached retina or injury that he had throughout the season. It had been giving him problems. He had kept getting knocked in the face and in the eye throughout the year. It seemed like that happened a lot more before, but he should be ready for training camp. I'm not ready to even talk about training camp. I still got the NBA Finals perfume on me.
You're thinking about Aruba right now.
Hey, man, relax.
Two toes down in the sand.
Man, somebody go walk up to me. Yeah, I heard you was. No, I'm not. You know where I'm going? I'm going to Acapulco. That's where I'm going.
Acapulco, right? There you go. Cancun.
We're going to Bora Bora. All right? Bora Bora.
Ooh.
Fancy. That's where I'm going. Now, the question is, it's always been funny the way that we view Anthony Davis. We've always been saying, man, when Anthony Davis takes over, is Anthony Davis going to take over the Lakers? He's going to snatch the baton from LeBron, then he gets traded. And you look at him like, man, Anthony Davis has been in the league since 2012. This is going to be year 14 for him. You don't usually elevate and get to a higher plane in year 14 with all the miles on your body like Anthony Davis has. But can he be an all-NBA player? Like, again, can he get back? Because he's not far removed from it. But do you think that for the Dallas Mavericks to be what Nico Harrison wants them to be, especially with Kyrie Irving probably out for all of next year, if not the most of next year, Cooper Flagg, you're going to have to bring him along slowly just because of the position that he plays. Klay Thompson is getting older. Like, you have pieces, you have a defensive identity, but Kyrie being out certainly slows everything. Do you think that AD can return to all NBA form? And if so, would that be enough to make the Mavericks a contender next year?
All NBA form? Yeah. But is he going to be an all NBA player? No. I mean, if you look at the 65 game requirement, he's played 13 seasons. He's only played 65 games in five of them. He's done it once in the last seven seasons. So to expect AD to play 65 games, I think, is a bet I'm not willing to take. Now, that being said, what is the Mavs ceiling? I think at best, it's probably the sixth seed, maybe fifth. But you got OKC, Houston, Minnesota, Denver. And then you got to toss up between what, the Warriors, the Clippers. I don't see how this team is really going to be a true title contender without Kyrie Irving on the floor. You just brought in D'Angelo Russell. To me, that's like it's a filler role. He's not a winning type player.
It's a stopgap.
It's a stopgap. Exactly right. And so I think that's how I'm viewing the Dallas Mavericks going into the next season. They have a good roster, but I don't think it's really going to compete for a title. They're going to be a middling playoff team, possibly a play-in team.
Look, look. The thing is about AD, he did make All NBA second team in 24, right?
Yeah.
Like that, and that was the year, if I remember correctly, he made All NBA second team, and they still lost in the first round of the playoffs to the Denver Nuggets, right? Like that. That's just a hard thing, and the Nuggets were their kryptonite.
Oh yeah.
That Nuggets team got lost in seven games to Minnesota in the next round. And the year before that, the Lakers made it to the Western Conference Finals because Anthony Davis was playing out of his mind in the postseason and got swept by the Denver Nuggets. Like, this is one of those things, and you're right. If if nothing else, they have the size to really, if all things work for good, they have the size defensively with Gafford, with AD, with Derek Lively. They're big across the board. Like, yeah. you can't count on Klay Thompson to play the type of positional defense that he played even when he was with Golden State. I don't know if he was much of a great defender as much as he was a great positional defender. And when you have an Achilles and an ACL and you're about to be 35, that's asking way too much to expect you to be more than a standstill shooter. D'Angelo Russell's never been a defender. He's a talented playmaker. He's a talented scorer. I think he's a really talented scorer. And I think he's going to have a green light of sorts, at least until Cooper Flagg turns it up a little bit, I would think, in the second half of next season, once he gets used to the NBA speed, the NBA athleticism, all that sort of thing. So
you actually think it's going to take a little while for him to come on? You don't see him just getting thrown right into the fire and kind of adapting? Because you got to see him play against NBA talent in the Olympics, the trials last year. So, like, did you come away with, like, oh, he could definitely adapt pretty quickly to this NBA style play?
Yes. I thought, in watching him, you know, he was part of the U.S. select team that played and scrimmaged against the U.S. national team in preparation for last summer's Olympics. Yes, I was like, oh, he's athletically there. If you take away the point of him being white, we would say he's one of the great athletes in the league, or great athletes coming into the league. But because he's white, we have to give him all these other descriptors that don't actually apply to him. We can talk about that another day, our sophistication and how we discuss these things. But for the purposes of this discussion, if he's going to play with the ball, because Jason Kidd wants to experiment with him playing point guard in summer league, a la Grant Hill. Go look him up. A la Giannis, when Giannis was in Milwaukee and Jason Kidd was coaching. Giannis, I think in 2015-16 and 16-17, played a lot of point guard, taking it off the glass, going up, just giving him the freedom to make plays. You still had a point guard in name there. I think Eric Bledsoe was their point guard for those couple of years, and Malcolm Brogdon was there. But Giannis had the freedom to play make because Jason wanted him to be able to see the whole floor, to be able to make mistakes, and to use his gifts, his speed, his athleticism to his advantage in ways that a traditional point guard would not. So I would not be surprised if, in the beginning, because that is such a new role for Cooper Flagg, that he will struggle a bit, but it can pay off on the back end because, like I said, let's be honest, you're not going to expect championship expectations until Kyrie Irving comes back, and he signed a 3-year extension. Yep. So you're going to try to keep this core together for the next few years and hope that maybe by year two of Cooper Flagg, a full year of Kyrie Irving, hopefully AD is healthy and in his prime, another year of Gafford and Lively playing together, that you can challenge Oklahoma City and look at that team as the model. If Oklahoma City is the model, teams have to be big, they have to be long, and have to be versatile. You have to be able to play multiple ways. I think that's the lesson Oklahoma City taught us, is that you have to play in multiple ways to be able to win. And if nothing else, even if Dallas stumbled upon that, even if they fell on their face in trying to get there, they might have gotten there, and they have some pieces that can enable them to play a different style. It remains to be seen if Anthony Davis, at the tender age that he's going to be come next season, like he's like 32. Ooh. So you're talking about age 32, 33, 34. Is he still going to be effective enough to help Dallas, to lead Dallas in that space? Now, the other half of that trade was Luka Doncic. Luka Doncic potentially can sign and extend with the Lakers this offseason, which, of course, would validate everything that the Lakers want. You have your star for the future. You know, this is potentially the last year of LeBron James. You want to have your next headliner already in place for your new $10 billion owner. He potentially, because of the rules of the CBA, which I will not bore you on, he could sign a shorter deal that takes him to year 10. And if once he goes to year 10, he can take a bigger percentage of the salary cap on that extension, a la Jalen Brunson. Are you somebody that's like, you know what, let's Luka sign up for the long term now? Or do you, if you're like Luka, are you like, hey man, I want to get to that 10-year max and let's play it out for the next 3 years?
I think Luka knows, especially from what just happened, he needs to get to that 10-year mark. So I think he's playing the long game here. It doesn't make financial sense for me. If I'm Luka, I would wait out for that $400 million opportunity in 2028. Because the other thing that comes into play here is that once he stays, I believe it's 4 years with a team and 10 years, he can get a no trade clause. And I think that's the thing that he's probably looking at the most. Like, I want to be untouchable. I want that LeBron treatment that Bradley Beal somehow has still in this NBA. But that no trade clause, I think, is the most important thing that he's trying to get. And I think that he will stay with the Lakers long term. I think he's, so far we've seen him and JJ Redick get along very well. Obviously, they played together, but I think year one was pretty much a success once Luka came over. They didn't get to the place they wanted to, but I think they're still trying to build around Luka. And I think this is more pressure on Rob Pelinka than Luka. So we'll see what it do. But I think all early reports is that Luka's in shape. If you talk to Ayton, he's ripped. I don't know if I believe that, but like, we'll see how this next
relatively
iteration
ripped. Relatively ripped. Relatively.
But I'm still wondering, like, I don't know, man. Ayton's kind of lazy. So like, I don't know if that's the guy that you pair with Luka to make this thing work. But you know what I'm saying? Like, we'll see how it goes. But I think long term, Luka is the face of this franchise. He's the one that's going to be there long term. I just don't think he's going to re-up now. Makes financial sense and business sense for him to just wait till 2028.
Yeah. The thing is, in 2028, y'all, just listen to the numbers. And I know in the last segment we talked about, the player's getting screwed. He's like, Benny, listen to yourself. In 2028, he can sign for 5 years and $406 million. That is an average of $81.2 million. Now, I'm not a mathematician. I will, of course, on the low end, I would probably say maybe that first year is like 72, right? And then it keeps going up incrementally with raises. But I think by year five, if my mental math is right, he's probably making somewhere around $92 million. If my mental math is correct, at the end of that 2028 or at the end of that 2032-33 season, by which I don't want to think about what age I will be going into that, that man could be making an excess, possibly making an excess of $90 million, which is actually more than $1 million a game. And you got the nerve to sit up somewhere and fix your mouth and say that the players are being screwed. I said that.
Land the plane.
Land the plane. Right. There we go. So last thing before we get to the last word. Steve Nash and Kevin Durant were on LeBron James's Mind the Game podcast. Steve Nash is a regular on this. It's normally Steve and LeBron. Kevin Durant came on there. And, of course, Steve Nash was formerly the coach of the Brooklyn Nets in year one. They probably should have went to the NBA Finals. They probably should have won it off, not for James Harden's hamstring injury, if not for Kyrie Irving's ankle injury, if not for Kevin Durant's foot or toe being on the line or above the line in that game seven against the Milwaukee Bucks. Maybe the Brooklyn Nets do have a chance at winning. I think Kevin Durant couldn't have done it by himself. So I don't think the toe thing matters as much because he was playing 48-minute games. They were playing every other day. He would have been worn out. But had he had James Harden at full strength, which he was not, had Kyrie Irving been able to come back, which he did not, then that team by far looked like the absolute best team in the NBA in 2020-2021. The next year was the vaccine mandate. Kyrie didn't want to take the jab. James Harden was like, man, get me out of here. And everything went up in smoke. And it left KD as the last man standing. Steve Nash got fired, blah, 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 all this other stuff. I don't think we look at that team as like unfulfilled potential. We look at that team as just being a hot ass mess.
And failure.
Yeah, there's a total failure. And I think take a step back, it's more nuanced because it was just wild. Like the vaccine stuff and Harden coming in and everything else. Like, it was just wild. But during the games that they played together, it was beautiful magic. We just don't remember too much of it just because life was so different for all of us back then. And Steve Nash said, I didn't get to coach as much as I wanted to because he had to manage. All those other things. And then it wasn't just Kyrie with the vax mandate. And then there was Kyrie with the video and everything else. All the weird things that was going on back then, you didn't get a chance to see that Nets team at full bloom. And then, you know, KD was like, you know, quote unquote, everything around us was going to
I mean, well, how many games did they play together? 16 games?
I think 10 that year or something. Some low, super low, crazy number.
Yeah, I'm seeing 13-3 with them on the floor together. That's, I think two things could be true. Steve Nash didn't have an opportunity to really coach because they weren't available. Like that trio did not get enough of experience of court time together to really fulfill anything. And then when you couple that with all of the extracurricular stuff with Kyrie, I think that that's going to probably go down as one of the worst trios ever assembled. Because I'm trying to look at, like, what did they even get back after that? Drummond, Curry, Ben Simmons, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, 7 first-round picks that haven't really – I mean, they spent 5 of them on point guards in this last draft. If you just look at the totality of what that experience did for the franchise, it set them back, like, easily, what, a half a decade?
Yeah.
Counting now? Like, that was a bad – not only just the experience in the moment, but the aftermath of it was just as bad.
Yeah, it was – the word that comes to me was, like, it was a joyless time. Like, even when the basketball was good and everything else, like, we were in the house. We couldn't really go to games. You couldn't really interact to get a feel for how everything was. Like, it looked beautiful at times. Like, that was the year Boston did not look great as a unit. I think that was the year that Brad Stevens was like, man, get me out of here. I can't coach these guys. But, and Brooklyn waxed them in the first round of the playoffs that year. And then the next year, Brooklyn got they get back. When Boston put them out and Kevin Durant looked exhausted. He looked exhausted in carrying that team just because James Harden had you know, James Harden had acted up.
He wanted to trade him
He wasn't there. They traded him for Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons couldn't play.
Yeah, yeah. Right,
Kyrie was only playing home games at that point. And by the time he had to play every other day, maybe he stomped on Lucky. And it was all of that stuff was going on. It just was joyless and soulless, and it just did not seem fun. It was supposed to be fun, and none of it seemed fun. And I will counter with this on a little bit. When they traded Kevin Durant to Phoenix and they got Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges, and some picks, what happened was the Knicks were like, man, we want Mikal Bridges. Give us all your first-round picks. So inadvertently, they wound up getting – a crap load of first round draft picks because of secondhand smoke on the Kevin Durant trade. I know that's a lot that I just brought up to y'all, but either way, it was a great experiment that in theory looked good, especially when you added Harden there. It just didn't fulfill, and everybody has to take a little bit of culpability there. Steve Nash was inexperienced as a head coach to deal with all that stuff. A lot of people are going to say Kevin Durant should have been more of a leader. But I don't know how you can make Kyrie Irving take a jab and do something he doesn't want to do. And you can't make James Harden not do what James Harden has done in the bunch of literally, other places that he has done. And Kevin Durant was the last professional standing until he said, get me out of here. It's just going to go down. One of those big what ifs. Once again, I think like today is like the theme of like, what if, what if, what if, what if. That's one of the biggest what ifs that we had, especially in recent NBA history. And then we'll be back with the last word. Time for the last word here with Dan Titus. Dan, free agency looks to be just about over. We're headed to Summer League. Of course, some crazy stuff could happen. So you kind of gave it a little bit when we were talking about Dallas and where they stood. But just for official posterity's sake, you give me your top 3 teams in the Western Conference headed into next season.
So guys, start with the reigning champs, OKC Thunder, number 1. I'm going to go Houston number 2 after getting Durant. I think they did some really good things in the offseason. Curious to see how Reed Shepard looks in the summer league because he's going to be thrusted into a bigger role for sure. And then third, give me Minnesota, man. I think that them running it back, I think, is going to be a really interesting storyline. Obviously, they lost Nikhil Alexander-Walker, but they have some young talent there that they can give some valuable rotational minutes to. So, yeah, I'm really excited about them too.
I like Minnesota because I want to see where Jaden McDaniels can go as far as taking a leap. Like, there is a Kawhi Leonard
element about him defensively that you're like, okay, not only do you get after it, but you're kind of underutilized offensively just because you've got Ant, who takes up a lot of space, Julius Randle, of course, who takes up a lot of space. But if there's an opening for him to be a secondary playmaker, to be a guy who's so just athletically gifted that you can take advantage of the ball swinging, you know, to the attacking closeouts, swinging to the weak side. Like, I want to see where his growth takes him, you know, as he starts to enter his physical prime. Ant is has taken leap after leap after leap every year. Like this year, he was a little too much Klay Thompson for me, but I think, unfortunately, that's what the game called for when you've got Julius Randle down there and you've got Rudy Gobert down there. And when they were trying to get Kevin Durant, like, it felt like Rudy Gobert was the piece that they were trying to dangle.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like you couldn't really dangle Julius Randle just because of his contract situation. Like, the biggest piece that it felt like that they could dangle was Rudy Gobert. And I wonder what that means for Rudy long term there as he starts to go into his, you know, mid-30s. But he's still an effective player. I agree with you on Oklahoma City. I agree with you on Houston. I wonder if there is as big of a gulf. I'm going to give you a third team because I think Bradley Beal will wind up there.
Ooh, the Clippers.
I think it's between the Clippers and Denver. Denver has shown up a lot of loose ends. You know, when you go and trade for Cameron Johnson and you go get off of Aaron Gordon's money and you bring
Bruce Brown back.
You bring Bruce Brown back, and now the question is, is Jamal Murray going to be a consistent player? Is Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, those young guys, remember, talking about CBA stuff and the last couple of things, you have to hit on your draft picks. Your draft picks have to hit if you have Nikola Jokic on a max and Jamal Murray on a max, even if you don't think he's a max player. He's on the max, which means you got two max players. You got two big boy maxes, and you've got to figure stuff out around the edges, and it seems like they have begun to. That is my third team with a nod to the Clippers, who I think is going to get Bradley Beal, and I think Bradley Beal still has game left. We just look at Bradley Beal as his salary and not necessarily his game, and I love the fact that they wound up getting John Collins in that trade for Norman Powell. Because maybe Norman Powell wasn't going to be able to, you know, explode the way that he did last season and have another career year. And you were able to leverage that in getting a lob threat for James Harden, who had a surprisingly good, maybe not an efficient year, but a good year. And if we get a healthy Kawhi Leonard, maybe we got something there.
And they brought in Brook Lopez to back up Ivica Zubac. So, I mean, I think that that's definitely a good upgrade for that team, which I think, to your point of Norman Powell, he played really well in the first half of the season when Kawhi wasn't there. Numbers kind of tapered off once Kawhi came back in the fold. So I think that was a great trade to get John Collins.
So now to the Eastern Conference, and this is where, class, you can use your cheat sheet because you have no idea who's playing who's playing where. All you know is that Jason Tatum is hurt and Tyrese Halliburton's out for the year. So give me your three teams.
Cleveland, they got the top spot. Then I'm going to go with probably the Knicks, because not a lot of changes over there, and I like what they did with adding Jordan Clarkson and Gershon Yabusele in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, Mike Brown's the head coach. I think that that's going to play into them actually utilizing their bench a little bit more than Tibbs did. Mm-hmm. And then third, that's where things get interesting. On paper, I'm going with the Orlando Magic. Something tells me that the Atlanta Hawks might sneak in there too, but then you can't count out Philly if...
Yes, you can.
Huge if. Huge if.
Yes, you can.
Huge if.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, Joel's not. He's probably not coming back. But I'm just saying, I think that third spot, it's up for grabs if everybody's healthy. Given the landscape, I think that's where it's going to be a little bit more parity.
You said you can't count out Philadelphia. We've been counting out Philadelphia since 2001, and we ain't been wrong. Damn. We ain't been wrong. I'm sorry. My bad. Did I say something wrong? No, but I think some of the moves that Philly made, like you get Jeremy McCain back after injury, Tyrese Maxey.
It's really just health. It's health contingent, which is a huge if, right?
So he's now a young vet. Like, he's at the point where, you know, Maxey's a young veteran now. You know what
it's
I mean?
His
like
team. It should be his team. We'll see how it plays.
As long as as long as the big fella's there, everything that they do is going to be built around Joel Embiid. Whether that is that ship is going to go down with him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's just, you know, like, I'm really looking forward to seeing BJ Edgecombe, like, to see how he performs. He seems like he's one of those ready guys that can come in and contribute immediately. Like, I'm with you on that. But I just don't know if I trust, Podcast P and, you know, for another season. And Joel Embiid's health is just not something I know I can control. I'm with you on the first two teams, Cleveland and New York. At some point, Cleveland's going to do it, right?
They're going to do it or they're not.
Do it. Like, win a championship or?
No. Like get beyond that glass ceiling.
Okay. They should have a clear runway to the first seed in the Eastern Conference this year.
Yeah. I mean, they had the clear runway last year because they created it. But now it's really on them. Orlando, like you said, adding Desmond Bane. The question is, can they be healthy? I'm not sure if, you know, like, their injuries were freak injuries. It wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to have Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner both get hurt where you can't see both of them play together at the same
injury
time.
Too. Both have an oblique injury. Super weird.
Yeah, that's not a common NBA injury. It's not an ACL. It's not an Achilles. It's not an MCL or whatever it is. Right. Like, those are just freak injuries that just happen to happen to your best players around and at they're playing at the same age. I'm curious to see if they can both share the same space on the floor and be both potent scorers, not necessarily to help, but be potent scorers. I'm with you. Atlanta is intriguing to me because of all the length that they have surrounding Trae Young. But as I've said before, this is a make or break year for Trae Young as far as defensively. Can you be a leader on a team and not say, I need to score 30 and have 10 assists and have all of the usage? I don't know if that's a recipe for success. Could the Milwaukee Bucks be sneaky in this? Could the Milwaukee Bucks be sneaky in this? I don't know.
They need like a Bradley Beal to go there in order to do that. And I don't know that that's going to happen. Like, I feel like they're...
Or Chris Paul.
Yeah, I guess that's a good stopgap. Yeah. I don't see Chris Paul going there for his final season, though.
I don't either. I see Chris Paul playing in warmer weather, but Chris Paul also wants to start. So it's a bunch of different things and different agendas working in those places. But I'm with you on the first two teams. That third team could be anybody. I'm not sure about – I know people say, what about Detroit?
I don't love the moves that they made, to be honest. Like, I thought that they were all right. And obviously, the Malik Beasley kind of messed that up. They had a whole plan in place, and now they had to pivot. But I don't know that I love the moves that they made this offseason so far, at least to get to that next echelon of tier in the Eastern Conference.
It's going to be internal growth. Like, the thing is, it's going to be Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, Asar Thompson, Ron Holland, Kay Cunningham for another year. Like, the moves that you made have said, we don't want to put too much as far as resources into free agency. Our young guys, our young diamonds have to be able to grow in this environment. Even if they win fewer games, we need to see more from them because Jaden Ivey is going to restricted free agency. Jalen Duren, unless they come to an agreement, goes into restricted free agency. You got to find out what you have. Right. And Asar Thompson is the guy that I'm not trading for nobody.
Thompsons are untouchable, man. They're untouchable.
Yes, untouchable. Not trading either one of them, period, point blank. But that is my man, Dan Titus. Dan, I really appreciate you, my man.
No doubt, Vinny.
See you at Summer League. See you in Las Vegas, where it's going to be hot and sticky and dry and all of that stuff. I don't get why y'all love Vegas, but y'all love y'all some Vegas. Summer League is coming up. Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that works hard behind the scenes on this show, i.e., producer Dakota, my man, I really appreciate you. I'll be back next week at Summer League where you'll see some stuff, some interviews and all that type of stuff. And then after that, I'm taking a break. So I'll see y'all soon.